Welcome to the R&R Show with Sam and Jacob from First Baptist Church of Sanford. We're here to give you a ready response as we apply God's Word to some of life's questions. Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to the R&R Show. This is Election Day, but we are going to discuss something different. We're going to talk about persecution, specifically persecution of Christians, because November is the Persecuted Church Month, or another way of saying it would be the month to remember persecuted Christians around the world. We're all one church. In fact, Sunday, November 1st, for the past several years, has been recognized as the International Day of Prayer for Persecuted Christians. And we want to ask this question just right off the bat, actually multiple questions, but the main focus today is this. We want you to call in 919-775-1050. Answer this question. We want to hear from you. Should Christians in the West, particularly in the United States, expect to face persecution for their Christian beliefs? We're going to talk more about this in the coming moments, but we'd like to hear from you. Should Christians in the West, particularly in the U.S., expect to face persecution for their Christian beliefs? 919-775-1050. And along those lines, think about this, callers. Is it happening now? Is persecution happening now? Is it going to happen soon? And what makes you think this? We'd like to hear from you about that, whether you think it is coming soon or it's happening, or if it's not really something we need to be concerned about. What makes you think this? So, Jacob, you know, many in the United States, we could just say the West, but let's make it the United States. I think many of us, you know, we believe that persecution of Christians is something that happens in other countries, in faraway places, other parts of the world. I mean, we know this, if we know anything about the history of our founding of our nation, that many of our forefathers, foremothers, they came over here to escape religious persecution. And they were, for the most part, Christians, they were Catholics, they were Presbyterians, different denominations, Baptists, you know, whatever. But they came over to these shores to escape religious persecution for their Christian beliefs, their particular biblical beliefs in other countries. So we tend to think that it has really never been an issue in the history of our nation. But that's not true, is it?
No, unfortunately, that's not true. We got a great article here that we were looking through earlier from a professor at Baylor University. But it says in 1774, so all right, before the Declaration of Independence, 1774, James Madison wrote to a friend in Pennsylvania about troubling developments in Virginia. Goes on to say, the worst news he had to deliver was that the diabolical, hell-conceived principle of persecution. So let's back that up a second.
It's a quote there.
I'm quoting. They're quoting him here. It is not me. He says, the diabolical, hell-conceived principle of persecution was raging in the colony. There are at this time not less than 5 or 6 well-meaning men in jail for publishing their religious sentiments. He asked them to pray for liberty of conscience to revive among us. So even before the Declaration of Independence, there were people in the colonies who were being persecuted because of their beliefs, their religious beliefs. And the article goes on to talk about how a lot of those were Baptists. It says that the Baptists were one of the key groups that suffered from that. And he talks about how part of it was because of the brash style of the Baptists, which I'll go along with that. We're not one of those wimpy denominations.
Unusual practices and brash style.
yes. We don't have boring preachers. But he also talks about how a lot of it has to do with believers' baptism. Almost all the churches at that time practiced infant baptism, and that was kind of seen as a way to start your kids on the right path. It's not biblical, so I don't know how to explain it.
I don't know if we could defend it very well.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend it.
We don't hold to it.
Yeah, we don't hold to it. But If you did believe in it at that time, to have Baptists going around telling you that you shouldn't do that and that you should practice believer's baptism, well, that put Baptists on a lot of people's bad lists. So that led to some persecution of Baptists.
Right. I mean, they viewed this idea of believer's baptism as what? I mean, it seemed tantamount to child abuse.
Yes.
Because you're not allowing your child to be baptized as an infant.
Exactly. That was almost kind of like throwing your kids to the wolves or not, you know, raising them in a Christian home or you know, that's probably how they would view it.
Now, was this taking place in England or France? Remind us.
No, that's over here.
That's okay.
In the colonies.
Okay, all right.
So here, and you may think, well, okay, there's a big difference between persecution and being inconvenienced or not being popular, but we have quite a few examples. We have a guy named Obadiah Holmes, who was a Baptist preacher, and he was given 30 lashes with a whip for going around and preaching about this, and I think he was accused of proselytizing for the Baptists, so sharing what he believed to be the gospel or biblical Christianity got him 30 lashes from a whip. So I personally count that as persecution.
Yes, yes. I mean, he's out there evangelizing, trying to show people that, no, the Bible actually teaches a believer's baptism, so this is a grave offense, I guess, to the authorities.
Yeah, and in 1645, Massachusetts actually passed a law that specifically banned Baptists from the colony. Maybe that's why there's not as many Baptists there now. I don't know. But yeah, so, I mean,
could be.
Even in 1645, we have particular Christian groups being banned, completely banned from colonies. So I think it's very fair to say that we have had religious persecution in the United, well, they weren't the United States yet, but over here. In the New World, the colonies, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and you know, I love this quote from Obadiah Holmes. Jacob, you and I were talking about this. This sounds very much like Latimer and Ridley. I mean, granted, Holmes is he's just being whipped, you know.
He's
not being burned to death. But he comes, here's a quote from him. They tried to keep him quiet, but they couldn't, as they're going to inflict this punishment. He says, quote, "I am now come to be baptized in afflictions by your hands, that so I may have further fellowship with my Lord and am not ashamed of his sufferings, for by his stripes I am healed." And then Holmes is tied to a post and says the officer tasked with meting out Holmes' sentence spit on his hands, took up a whip, and began flailing him with all his might. And it says that Holmes, though, felt the presence of God as at no other time in his life, the pain of the scourging lifted away. When they untied him, Holmes stood up and smiled. "You have struck me as with roses," he chided them. Jacob, when I read accounts like this happening in the history of our nation, and we'll get to that specific question in a second here more clearly, but just think what these people were willing to undergo because of their biblical convictions. It seems so foreign to what many of us experience today. They're willing to undergo this type of treatment and persecution because of what they believe the Bible teaches.
Yeah, unfortunately today, the church has gotten very soft, and we don't want to be inconvenienced, much less whipped. You know,
right.
we can't even get you to get out of bed on Sunday morning, much less take lashes from the whip. So
here we go. And I like Thomas Kidd, this historian at Baylor, goes on to say that colonial America, though, did have an embryonic tradition of religious liberty. As Baptists, we like to point to Roger Williams. He was the founder of the Rhode Island colony. Remember, he was expelled from Massachusetts. He criticized the colony's mingling of state and church. So as Baptists, you can see we have this history. It goes back farther than this, but certainly in the founding of our nation, of wanting a certain type of separation of church and state. That's morphed into something quite different, which we can hopefully get into, but in many quarters today. But in any event, Kidd also notes that Roger Williams set up a colony where no one would suffer persecution for their beliefs or religious practice there. Somewhat analogous, you have William Penn's Pennsylvania, founded in the 1680s. He offered religious liberty not only to persecuted Quakers, but to a host of Christian sex. But here we go. By 1700, okay, Kidd notes that most of the worst type of persecution has gone away, but we still have these official denominations. Just like they had the official church in England, we have these colonies that have these official denominations in their colonies. And these new radical movements, though, start emerging from the Great Awakening. And this is around the 1740s or during the 1740s. And these new religious movements, these new Christian movements, they run afoul of these established churches and their requirements. So a new wave of American persecution began. So the Great Awakening was a big event in our nation's founding. A lot of people look at our founding and attribute a lot of what took place with the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the struggle for independence. They point to the Great Awakening and what took place there as a real impetus for that. But in any event, another note, in the mid-1700s, okay, now we have these Baptists, they're in Massachusetts, Sturbridge, Massachusetts, and they refuse to pay to support the Congregationalist Church. And so what happens? They're not paying to support this church in Massachusetts. The authorities throw them in prison, some of them, and they're imprisoned for tax evasion. And then you have some other Baptists, many others, where they have their property seized. It says including livestock, tools, pots, and pans. So this is what's happening. And you have these two guys come on the scene named James Madison and Thomas Jefferson. And they're in Virginia. They're the Virginia guys. And they see the era's worst outbreak of persecution against Baptists. So it's during the 1760s, the 1770s. It says more than 30 Baptist pastors were jailed for illegal preaching in the colony. Illegal preaching in our nation, in our founding.
So at some point, it's been illegal preach something that the government doesn't like. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's right. In the history of America, we have this idea of illegal preaching. So many more Baptists suffered violence and intimidation. There was this itinerant Baptist preacher, though, named James Ireland. And he was among those Baptist preachers who were arrested. But it says even jail time would not shut him up. His friends, supporters came to listen to him. He preached through the cell gates. Now, he's put in prison for preaching, but while he's in there, he continues to preach through the cell gates. Some of these, it says, were African-American Christians whom authorities dragged away and whipped. Ireland's tormentors also, they tried other ways to keep him quiet. Some of them burned some noxious materials to drive away his audience, and some even, they did worse things. We'll just stop it there. But here we go. So this is happening in Virginia. And these troubles in Virginia, they generate a backlash. So then Kidd notes you have this perhaps unlikely association between enlightened elites and evangelical Christians who are calling for a new era of religious freedom. And so he notes there that this leads to one of the most important statutes regarding religious liberty in American history. So you have James Madison and John Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, backed by legions of Baptists, other evangelicals, and they finally secure the adoption of the, quote, Bill for Establishing Religious Liberty, and that's in 1786. You know what that does? That stops formal support for the Church of England. It promises an end to religious persecution, and that law was the critical precedent for what, Jacob?
Madison's religious clauses in the First Amendment. So it led to that.
Right. And those two main clauses there are known as the Free Exercise Clause, the Free Exercise of Religion, and the Establishment Clause, which says that Congress shall not establish a national denomination. Now, America has historically set the global pace for religious liberty. But here's what Kidd says. Though even in America, that freedom was hard won. Long before secularism took hold in America, persecution was already part of the American story. All right, let me just go down here and read this last sentence. If there was a time when free exercise of religion was viciously denied to many Americans, we would be foolish to think that this could never happen again.
And I think one thing that we should really note as we go through this and look, you know, at no point were the Baptists or people who were persecuted by another religious group. And it wasn't even just so much that they were Christians, but it seems like what they believed was inconvenient to everybody else, or was, what is the phrase that it used in the article? Unruly or stirred up trouble. So, you know, you may say, well, you know, this, we're, the majority of America is Christian, or this, this, and that, but that doesn't really protect us either. What got them in trouble was preaching something that was unpopular in the country.
Right. They were called the troublers of churches. Now, Jacob and I are both Baptists. We're not saying that the Baptists were the only Christian denomination that was persecuted in our founding era, but obviously they were. I mean, the Baptists took a lot of the brunt of this. Now, here's the deal, Jacob. I want our listeners to call in. Should Christians in the West, particularly in the U.S., expect to face persecution for their Christian beliefs? So even if it's foolish to think this could never happen again, do you look around the landscape now and just say, you know, that's not going to happen here? And if it happens, it's way out in the future. Or do you think, no, it could be right around the corner? This, Christians could face similar types of persecution very soon. Or is it happening even now? In what ways? So we'd like to hear from you. 919-775-1050. This clause here, the establishment clause, Jacob, I like what Kidd says here. It says it prohibited Congress from establishing a national denomination. That was what was in view. It doesn't, though, prohibit, does it, religion in the public square? Is that what Madison was trying to do, give us a completely secular society here in the United States?
No, I think he was trying to prevent the government from doing what they do with everything else, and that's ruining it or doing a bad job. He doesn't want the government controlling religion. I don't think that it says that religion can't be in the public square, or it's even trying to make it a in your privacy only thing. That's not what's going on.
But don't we hear that a lot? Just in public discourse, it's almost like religion is something that is harmful or evil, and we can't ever bring that into the discussion, whether it's in local politics, national politics, or just, you know, anything to do with statecraft. We can't have a motivation that comes from our religious views to support a particular course of policy. That seems like we have to, according to many, keep our Christian beliefs, like you said, isolated and private, keep it away from the public sphere.
Well, it's a lot easier to make, you know, when you completely remove religion from the conversation or what people believe, then it's much easier to remove morals. If you take away the conscience, or you take away that there is a right and there is a definite wrong, then it's much easier to do things that we shouldn't do. And so I think a lot of what times happens is people, they want to do things that they know goes against God's word.
So what you're saying is right. It just becomes, it's just more convenient. We don't want to have to ground our public policy, our way of life, in any kind of set moral standard. We want to get rid of that. And certainly Christianity, which has the Bible as its book.
If you can remove absolute truth, then anything sells.
And so I think that's a great observation, that we want to get rid of it, because get rid of any kind of Christian discussion, because then we would be tied to a moral standard.
Exactly.
That's what's driving a lot of this. And I think Madison and Jefferson would recoil at that idea, that we cannot bring in our Christian beliefs, that religion has no role in how we look at a right course of public policy. That would be a foreign concept to them. I mean,
I don't even think that they would have considered that people would take it in that direction. I think that, yeah, I think you're right. I think it would be so foreign that they would just be boggled that somebody would even think that's what they meant.
And one of the reasons I believe they would find that so hard to believe is because they never envisioned our nation having government be so intrusive. I know not everyone agrees with that, but if you look at this idea of the founding documents, it was this idea of a limited government. Now, whether you believe that we need more government involvement or less government involvement in our daily lives, I think it is fair to say that Jefferson and Madison did not envision seeing the state so expansive as arguably it is today.
I would definitely agree with that.
And so when you have that, and if you look at, and I don't want to get into all the Supreme Court cases because I haven't read them in a long time, but these, and they're new each year, each session, but you see these two clauses, these religion clauses, coming in conflict with each other. You have the free exercise of religion, which is in the Bill of Rights, in the First Amendment. In that same amendment in the Bill of Rights, you have that Congress shall not establish a national a religion. And so, you know, when you have government so involved in our lives in a way that these founders never envisioned, you're going to see this tension, and you're going to see it's really it's hard to reconcile the two with each other, because it's something that they never envisioned, seeing the way the government is now. Well, here's the question: should Christians in the West, particularly in the U.S., expect to face persecution for their Christian beliefs? 919-775-1050. If you want to call in, you need to do so quickly. There has been persecution, Jacob, of God's people from the beginning of time. Well, we could look at the Bible. We can go back to the Old Testament.
Listen to the words of Jesus. This is John 15:20. Jesus is talking, "A servant is no greater than his master," said Jesus. "If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you." I mean, Jesus has never sugarcoated. He's told us from the beginning that if you follow him, it's not going to be popular. You're going to be persecuted at some point.
Exactly. So you could say, well, Jesus was referring just to those first disciples of his. That's, you know, be careful when we try to limit Jesus' statements to just those initial core. He seems to be talking about all of his followers. Whomever follows him, you can expect persecution. They persecuted him, they're going to persecute you. If they receive my teaching, they'll receive yours also. So let me ask you, Jacob, let me ask this question to you that we've given to our listeners today. Should Christians in the West, and particularly in the United States, should we expect to face persecution for our Christian beliefs? Is that something that you think is on the horizon? It's here, it's way out in the future. What do you think about that?
I do think that it's on the horizon. And when we talk about persecution, we're not talking about, you know, dumb things like Starbucks not wanting to say Merry Christmas. I mean, we're talking about real persecution, right? Like, it's actually going to cost you
something. I think we gave
something.
Some examples of that.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that people know what we're talking about. I do think that legitimate persecution is on the horizon. There's different things that we see going on in the news. So I don't think that we're quite there yet. But, you know, a year or two ago, Sam, I don't know if you remember this, but was it the mayor of Houston that was wanting to have all the pastors in Houston send in their sermons because she was upset?
Right.
Do you remember that?
I do.
When you start seeing things like mayors telling pastors, you have to send your sermons in so that we can look at them and make sure that you're not saying something that we don't like. Things like that trouble me.
And I'm pretty sure the thing that she was pointing to about these troubling sermons or potentially being troubling was the fact that they would contain some kind of hate speech.
Right.
And we've seen a proliferation of this in our laws, this idea that there is hate speech. Now, it's been a long settled law in our land, constitutional law, that if you run into a crowded movie theater and yell fire, that is not protected speech.
That's not a good idea.
No. And you can see the harm that could come from that. But when you start deciding that certain religious beliefs, convictions that flow from your Christian faith, for example, that you are not supposed to say those things publicly because those statements amount to hate speech, that's somewhat frightening.
It's a slippery slope.
It is.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, on Sunday morning, you should be able to get in the pulpit, Sam, and say anything that you want or that our church allows, and it's just not the government's business.
There are things that people say that I find very repulsive, and I find to be horrific, and yet, at the same time, I'm glad we live in a nation where people, at least until very recently, have had the freedom to say what they believe. And unless it comes to that standard of creating this kind of public panic through, you know, risking physical harm, people stampeding each other out of a movie theater because they think it's on fire. I think we should side in favor of speech rather than not.
It looks like we have a caller.
Hello, welcome to the R&R show.
Hi, how are y'all doing?
Doing great.
So, you were talking about the persecution and everything, and one of the things I can remember is when Tim Tebow played football. He was, you know, very outspoken Christian, and he would pray before all of his games and during the games and everything, and, you know, everybody even had the whole Tebow stance or whatever it was. But he was persecuted by a lot of the people because they said, you know, there's no place for, you know, I guess Christianity or any religion in sports. And then on the flip side of that, you also have, you know, like singers and actors and everything like that. When they win like an Oscar or a Grammy, the first thing they do is they say, you know, I'd like to thank God. But there's no persecution towards them as there would be towards somebody in the sport, you know, in like football or baseball or something like that. So I don't know. It was just kind of one of those things that, you know, I feel like some persecution has been going on for years, you know, maybe not to the extent of like y'all were talking about earlier with whipping and everything like that. But it is kind of like, what's the term? Ostracization.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Yep, we'll count that.
But, you know, it felt like Tim Tebow was ostracized because of his religious beliefs.
Thank you for that. Jacob, what do you think?
Yeah, I think there's some merit to that. It's interesting. Tim Tebow actually had a pretty good playoff record. I remember whenever he beat the Steelers during the playoffs, I think. And, you know, he wasn't being ugly or rude to anybody. He was just kind of going off to the side and kneeling and praying. And that was not acceptable. But you look at the type of protests and things that are acceptable, and there's a clear double standard there. We don't want you to go and pray and thank God for your athletic talent, but, you know, if you want to go off and kneel to, you know, trash our country, by all means, then we're going to support that. So, yeah, I definitely think there's some merit to our caller's point there.
It's a great point. I also think the difference between the people that are receiving awards, albeit, you know, whether it's actors, actresses, music awards, and they thank God, that's one thing. But Tim Tebow was doing more than that. He was actually using the name of Jesus Christ. And I think that is one of the key distinctions. People can talk about God this and God that, and yet they may be very sincere. I'm not saying they're not. But when you bring in Jesus' name, I think that gets a lot of feathers ruffled.
It's not inclusive enough.
It's not inclusive enough, exactly. And also, I think Tebow was, you know, was very clear about his Christian convictions and not just using the name Christ, but also modeling a lifestyle of obedience to Christ and being very, very clear about his Christian convictions. And it seemed like that's a great example. It may not have risen to the level of persecution like we described in terms of physical persecution, but the way he basically was marginalized, he may have lost his job in the NFL because of that, because of his Christian convictions. So I think that's a good call. Thank you.
And these things are going to build up over time. You're not just going to wake up one morning and all of a sudden they're shutting down all the churches. It's going to be a slow build up to where bit by bit this type of thing builds.
Exactly. And that's why we do need to vote. If you haven't voted, you need to do that, because we do live in a nation where we are still given this privilege to go and to vote. So if you are a believer, remember, you have this requirement to vote based on your Christian convictions, what the Bible teaches. We want to protect the right to practice our faith. We'll see you next Tuesday. God bless. We want to thank you for listening to the R&R show today. And look, if you don't have a church home currently, we'd like to invite you to visit us at the First Baptist Church of Sanford.
Yep, we're located at 202 Summit Drive here in Sanford, and we're currently having an outdoor service at 8:30. So bring your lawn chair and meet up with us in the morning.
We look forward to seeing you then.